Welcome to the Natural Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Whitfield Cook. Join us as we interview expert clinicians, researchers, and well-being experts from around the world and explore the evidence and application of complementary medicine in global healthcare. The following podcast is intended as professional information for integrative practitioners and as such must not be taken as medical advice. Patients are expressly directed to seek appropriate care from a suitably qualified practitioner. Welcome to the Natural Medicine Podcast and thanks for your company. I'm Andrew Whitfield Cook. Joining us today is Joanne Kennedy, a naturopath who specializes in methylation and histamine intolerance. That's indeed what we'll be talking about today. Welcome to Natural Medicine Podcast, Joanne. How are you?
Hi, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really well.
My absolute pleasure. Now, I guess we've got to start off with first, what is histamine? I know that sounds basic, but what is it? What are the symptoms of too much histamine?
Okay. It's a really important question, I think, because we need to understand that histamine is a normal part of our physiology, okay? It's a biogenic amine, and biogenic means that it's made by living organisms, including humans, animals, and plants. And in the human body, histamine is involved in the normal biological reactions, okay? So it's really important for responding to tissue injury and damage. So histamine widens capillaries, which enables immune cells to travel to the site of injury for repair. It's involved in the constriction of bronchial smooth muscle. So this is the normal part of the physiology of breathing. Okay, it's involved in constriction of the uterus that allows for embryo implantation and labor. It also stimulates gastric acid secretion, so hydrochloric acid, which is really important for breaking down our food. It also stimulates mucus secretions in the respiratory tract, which helps expel unwanted pathogens from the airways. It also stimulates the production of estrogen from the ovaries, which will support ovulation and progesterone production. And it's also a neurotransmitter in our brain. It's involved in controlling appetite, sleep-wake cycle, promoting learning and memory, helps control our body temperature. It also promotes the release of adrenaline and noradrenaline. It promotes the release of serotonin and it promotes the release of dopamine. So it's extremely important for mood. Okay, so it's a normal part of our biochemistry. Okay, and it is essential for life. However, we can have so many things that can occur in the environment which will tip our histamine bucket too high. And this is where the problem starts. Okay, so, you know, the thing with histamine is we're using it and then if we are unable to break it down, what will happen is due to all the histamine receptors we have throughout our body on many organs, okay, we've got them in the respiratory tract, in the gut, in the reproductive system, the cardiovascular system, in the brain, what can happen is the histamine gets too high, okay? So when it gets too high in the gut, one of the major things it will cause reflux and heartburn. This is because histamine is stimulating the H2 receptor to release hydrochloric acid, okay? Right. It will also stimulate excessive peristalsis. It can cause diarrhea. It can cause abdominal pain. In the respiratory tract, it can cause wheezing. Obviously, it's a major component of asthma. It can also cause heart palpitations. We have histamine receptors all over our skin. Okay, it's a major cause of eczema. It actually stimulates the sebaceous glands to release sebum production. So it's actually very implicated with acne. Okay, and in the brain, when it gets too high, it causes headaches and migraines, vertigo, motion sickness, nausea, inability to regulate your body temperature, anxiety, insomnia, and it plays havoc with estrogen. This is a really important thing. So histamine can increase the amount of estrogen being produced. If you can't break your estrogen down properly and it gets into the brain, it increases histamine in the brain. That causes a lot of these sort of hormonal issues that women get, such as migraines and ovulation before their period, vertigo, nausea, and chronic insomnia can also be very linked to the histamine estrogen picture. So we need it, but when it gets too high, it causes absolute havoc.
So you know, this is really interesting because, you know, way back in nursing, it was like histamine is kept in the granulocytes and it's kept safe. And then when it's let loose, you've got urticaria and all things bad, if you like, all things injury related. So hence, as you said, capillaries with an injury and certainly allergies, atopy, that sort of thing. And yet we now know that this is a normal part of physiology. So when we're talking about histamine being kept in the granulocytes versus histamine being used as a, you know, a neurotransmitter, obviously that's out of a cell, that's part of, you know, biochemical processes. It's just really interesting to me about, do you need that high sudden amount of histamine to cause a quote unquote bad reaction? Or is it just, as you say, this bucket that keeps on going up and up and up and up and bang, eventually you get symptoms? The reason I'm asking is because I understand that histidine, the precursor of histamine, if you give enough, it will dampen histamine. So it's sort of this, I'm still trying to get my head around production and use.
I really thought and researched a lot on that because of what I see in clinic. So I think what we've got to understand about histamine is that it's made within several cells in the body, not just mouse cells.
Right.
Okay. So there are other cells that make histamine. Okay. These include basophils and macrophages, neutrophils, lymphocytes, endothelial cells and smooth muscle cells. And inside the cells, histidine, which is an amino acid, gets converted into histamine with the help of B6. So the enzyme called the histidine decarboxylase enzyme, and this is B6 dependent. Okay, so what we've got to understand is what is stimulating this enzyme. Okay, and what stimulates this enzyme, the HDC enzyme, which will make histamine from non-mast cells, are things like LPS toxins, inflammation, gut bacteria, such as SIBO, okay, E. coli, Klebsiella, Pseudomonas, Campylobacter. These are all LPS.
Oh, wow.
That will increase histamine. Okay. So what is happening is that, you know, when there is inflammation in the body coming from LPS toxins, gut bacteria, and too much histamine food, is that the inflammation will cause histidine to be converted into histamine due to inflammation. And this is what you'll see the reactions occurring over 12 hours, 24 hours, 72 hours. It's not immediate and quick like mast cells.
Uh-huh. So
mast cells and basophils, the histamine is already stored and released by an antigen. Okay, so an antigen is a toxin that enters the body and causes the immune system to produce an antibody. And the antibody then binds to an antigen, and this lets the immune system know that this toxin should be destroyed. Okay, and when an antigen stimulates mast cells, the histamine gets released quickly. Histamine levels reach their peak within 30 minutes. An example of this is like a severe rash or hives that occurs soon after the exposure to the antigen. Okay, so this is the mast cell activation syndrome,
which
I really separate out. And what I see clinically, mast cell activation syndrome is significantly caused in most cases by mold.
Right.
Or Lyme disease. Some heavy metal, hectic heavy metal toxicity.
But
it's not coming from SIBO and candida and estrogen dominance and hormone imbalance. These things we can fix, right? Mast cell activation syndrome, it's like it's coming from something more insidious like mold illness, which absolutely causes havoc to the immune system.
Whereas when we're dealing with histamine intolerance, don't say, oh, I've got mast cell activation syndrome. Say, what is causing my histamines? Do I have gut issues, right? Do I have, you know, bloating and belching and reflux and constipation, diarrhea? I need to look at my gut. Are my hormones out of balance? Have I noticed that my histamines are worse ovulation before my period, right? So these things is what I'm looking at day to day, which is they're causing significant issues with histamine. Okay, not necessarily mast cells going berserk. It's just these epithelial cells and cell in the gut that are getting stimulated and releasing histamine under duress from something that we can fix. Yes, histamine does stimulate mast cells to release some histamine. Sorry, estrogen does stimulate mast cells to release histamine, but it doesn't mean you've got mast cell activation syndrome. It means you've got hormone imbalance.
Right. Okay. Right. So it's like, where do you intercede?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty scary diagnosis. And I see so many people being diagnosed with that. And it's like, hey, you've got SIBO. Like, you know, it's pretty obvious. You've got a regular menstrual cycle. We know your symptoms are worse due to that. Let's just test your SIBO, get your hormones balanced. And in 90% of the time, these people, you know, it's just an immune reaction to something going on in their body causing a release of histamine. It doesn't necessarily mean it's mast cells going berserk.
Right. Gotcha. So I guess the trick is to tell the difference. How do we do that? Do we use like biochemical assessments, pathology labs and things like that?
Okay, so I'll have someone come to see me and they've been told they have mast cell activation syndrome, but they have significant bloating, they have significant belching, flatulence, bowels are all over the place, okay? It's just, let's test SIBO.
Typical male.
Typical male. let's test SIBO, right? So, you know, 80% of the time they're going to come back positive for SIBO. Okay. Now, if they're a woman, all of that histamine being produced from SIBO is causing havoc with their hormones. It's very inflammatory, and we know inflammation is a major cause of anovulatory cycles and high estrogen, low progesterone, all of that. So we look at that picture. So clinically, it's very easy to sort of see the person in front of you. It obviously has gut issues. We can do a stool test for candida and histamine producing bacteria, do a SIBO test, balance your hormones the way us magical naturopaths can do, right? And then you will see that the person is, once you fix these issues, that their histamine bucket comes right down and they're no longer histamine intolerant. Okay, so these people don't have mast cell activation syndrome. So when someone comes to me and these people with mast cell activation syndrome, it's like, what is driving that? And some typical presentations will be people that have all the symptoms of mold illness, which will be all your histamine symptoms, but they'll have significant multiple chemical sensitivity, significant multiple food intolerances. They will have severe brain fog, lack of memory. They can't recall words. A lot of these people is like, I've done the SIBO protocol, I've done that, and I've fixed the candida, and I've balanced my hormones, but I'm not better. Okay, and these people, it's like red flag for mold illness. They've been sick for 20 years. They've been sick for a long time. Okay, so you're just going to be on high alert for those people that they'll come in and they've done so many things before, and it's never ever made them. They've never had significant improvement from it. Okay, so that's how I make the difference. Is what's driving mast cell activation syndrome? It's usually mold illness that I see clinically.
Right, but when we're talking about histamine intolerance, if it's purely an intolerance to whatever level it is there any point in measuring levels, or do we have to look at what the cause of the histamine intolerance?
I go with symptoms. There's no point. There's no real test that can measure your levels. You can do a Dow enzyme test. Now, test your Dow enzyme activity, but it's not testing how overloaded the Dow enzyme actually is.
No.
Making enough Dow, but it's just overloaded with all the histamine coming from the gut.
So what assessments do you do find are most helpful then? Is it purely a symptom picture?
Yeah, absolutely. A symptom picture with thorough case taking is really, really important. Then I'll definitely be testing SIBO, doing a simple CDSA to look at the large bowel microbiome. If I suspect oxalates, I'll send them off for an organic acids test.
Mm-hmm.
Oxalates will drive histamine significantly because they're so inflammatory. And then, you know, I believe, you know, a good naturopath should really be able to understand what's the hormone side of things, the high estrogen, low progesterone symptoms. It's very symptomatic. You know, how long are their cycles? What's going on with their physical symptoms, their emotional symptoms before their period? That's just really important to understand. You know, when they're getting things like headaches at ovulation, vertigo, nausea, insomnia, ovulation, this is classically high estrogen and histamine. Okay, so the rise in estrogen is stimulating a lot of histamine. Okay, and then it'll drop, and then they'll be okay. And then before their period, they're not detoxifying their estrogen properly, and they don't have enough progesterone. Again, sort of that high estrogen to high histamine picture again, and they'll be getting the headaches and migraines, anxiety, insomnia. Okay, that's very sort of quite easy to sort of pick. And that can happen in women with gut issues or simply women in perimenopause where they're starting to get these symptoms for the first time simply because they're not making the amount of progesterone that they used to. Okay. And they suddenly might be intolerant to red wine, bone broth, slow cooked casseroles. They go out for Japanese and like, oh my God, I had miso and soy and wine and I couldn't sleep. I had chronic insomnia. What's going on? I used to eat Japanese all the time. It's just how powerful our hormones are. And when your progesterone starts to drop and your estrogen is unopposed to progesterone, then your histamine bucket is going to increase and you won't tolerate histamines like you used to. And for some women, that's just a period of time that they need to understand. That's just, you know, that's just natural. Their hormones are changing. We can help get rid of reduce their histamine bucket if they have SIBO, help make more progesterone. But often going out and having a huge histamine meal at ovulation might not be the best thing to do during that period of time.
Right. So this is where I'm sort of going round in my head. If we're talking about a biogenic amine that's largely or importantly intaken in our diet, what's the cause of a sudden intolerance? Is it stress? Is it like, is it, you know, a SNP preponderance combined with stress, combined with time of life and hormonal changes and blah, blah, blah? Is it this like perfect storm that happens and then bang, you suddenly have histamine intolerance? Or is it something that is caused by inflammation and some other sort of antecedent?
Absolutely can happen like that, Andrew. So we go through a stressful period.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, stress is the major cause of gut issues. It'll reduce your hydrochloric acid. Okay, if you don't have enough hydrochloric acid, what's going to happen? Okay, you're going to get SIBO because it's going to lead to having a more acidic environment in the small bowel due to a whole range of different issues with digestive enzymes that causes. If you've got an acidic environment in the small bowel, that's going to cause SIBO. The other thing that's going to happen is that you are going to have malabsorption of your important nutrients for methylation, and methylation breaks down histamine, particularly.
Right.
Right. So this, we need to always remember the methylation stuff in the background. So if you're stressed, you reduce your hydrochloric acid, most likely you could end up with SIBO. You're not absorbing your B12 properly. Okay. B12 is essential for methylation. Well, if you're not absorbing your B12 properly, you're probably not absorbing your protein properly. So you're not getting your methionine. So your methionine is for SAMe, right? You need to make SAMe for your methyl donor. And then if you've got SIBO, you're not going to absorb your folate very well. Okay, so we
the pancreatic enzymes and brush border enzymes absorbing your folate, you could start falling down in your methylation simply due to malabsorption of nutrients because you've got low digestive enzymes. This is what happens in real life with methylation every day, all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. What we're saying, we're not looking at genes, we're looking at what's going on in real life. Okay. And then, the thing with methylation is it breaks down adrenaline. So if you're really stressed, you're going to be churning through your methyls to break down your adrenaline.
Gotcha. Okay.
So this is what happens. People go through a stressful time. If you're a woman, your hormones might go out a bit. And then you've got SIBO and you're like, I'm going on a health kick. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give up gluten. And then people start eating all these gluten-free products, which are full of starch that feed SIBO, right? And then they have insomnia and then they're stressed and then they...
Perfect storm.
And then their hormones get, they're not ovulating because they're so stressed. And then they start getting horrendous PMS and they're so confused and they try and eat better. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a juice cleanse. And feed SIBO, right? It's just that, and then it's just self-perpetuating, and they Google and they can't work out what to do, and the plant foods that they're eating are causing bloating, and they don't understand. Then what? Well, I'm going to go and have bone broth that heals your gut, and then I'm going to have fermented foods because my friend told me that is really good for your gut microbiome, and then we have a histamine storm,
right?
Absolutely. And then I've got MTHFR. I'm going to take methylfolate. I'm going to take methyls. I'm going to take SAMe, in fact, and I end up with a panic attack.
Then they're on this bandwagon of supplements as well.
Yep.
So to pull that back, though, Joe, if we're thinking about histamine intolerance preponderance or susceptibility, is the way to sort of tease apart what it could be, is that when you use SNP gene testing, genomic testing and things like that? Or do you have these in the background, but then you move forward and then what I'm picking up is that the treatments are very similar to what we'd ordinarily use for hormonal imbalance and digestive control and SIBO and things like that?
Absolutely. These genes that are looked at in these genetic tests that naturopaths will see, these genes mainly code for enzyme function, MTHFR, COMT, for instance. Now, these enzymes are dynamic and move around with the environment. Okay?
Yes. Yes.
So COMT, well, you might not have a gene mutation on COMT, but you're chronically constipated, so you can't poop out your estrogen. So it's just going back to the liver. So COMT is overloaded with estrogen. That's the thing. We don't need to, in my opinion, I don't need to look at those genes. We need to look at what's going on with you in real time.
Gotcha.
And methylation, we think about it from from our minds. We don't need to bombard our patients with this complicated gene test. I had a girl come in to me yesterday. She was beside herself. She was so full of SIBO and histamine. She'd been, inverted commas, diagnosed with MTHFR. She was so scared. She was just in tears. She was so overwhelmed. She's like, I can't believe I've got this diagnosis as well. I'm like, you don't have a diagnosis of MTHFR. It's not a diagnosis of a disease. It's not... You're full of histamine. It hasn't been treated properly.
Yeah. Okay. So, it's like being diagnosed as being short.
Yes. Exactly. So we don't want to overwhelm our patients. One really important test to look at is homocysteine because, if homocysteine's high, it's not moving around to make SAMe. Why you don't have enough methylfolate. Sure, look at homozygous C677T and MTHFR because you really, if you've got 70% reduction in functioning of that enzyme plus SIBO and you're not absorbing your folate, you might be very low in methylfolate, driving up your homocysteine. You want to look at your B12 levels. But when homocysteine is low,
this is a massive red flag for huge issues with the sulfation pathway. And what drives issues with the sulfation pathway in a big way is mold illness and oxalates. Okay, so if you see low homocysteine, it's something that you really need to think, hang on, we need to really think, we need to stop and think. This is not just a gluten intolerance case. You know, this is a big deal, right? So you know, that's when you sort of start asking questions about mold and oxalates, you know, which is a really specialized area, and you might need to refer on if you feel you need to. But that's a really, really big flag.
Okay. But what I'm picking up is, like, I understand what you're saying about, you know, that issue of being quote unquote diagnosed with methylation. I understand that. But notwithstanding, it is important. And so there does seem to be a relevance for testing. And I'm pretty convinced of this now. And I remember speaking with Dr. Denise Furness years ago about, but I come back to labs. I go to genomics and I come back to labs. I go to genomics, I come back to labs. But I do believe there's merit in both. Yeah. Even if you say, well, okay, I've got weak ankles, you know, so I now know that I have weak ankles, that sort of sports mentality. I know I have a preponderance for weak ankles, so I therefore take extra care to strengthen my leg muscles and strap when necessary and things like that. Similarly, with genomic testing, I might have a preponderance for methylation, so therefore I know that I need to support it more than others might. So I totally understand that testing, the relevance there. But I do take your point about having a responsible conversation and using correct wording. Because again, Denise Furness has illustrated the point where, you know, a woman wanted to have a termination of pregnancy because she had the 677T methylation gene or SNP, sorry. And it was like, we're back there. Hang on. Just because you've got it doesn't mean you're going to have a baby with a cleft palate. It's not that 100%. It's not like Huntington's chorea. So we get therefore into epigenetics and how we can control and support gene function. And that comes back to what you said earlier about it's a biogenic amine. It's largely or importantly given to us, I'm going to say the word, in our diet. So is diet where we start always?
Yeah, I mean, I think the with what, reducing histamine?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think what we really need to understand with histamine is that the DAO enzyme that breaks down histamine in the gut and other organs, right, is really taking the brunt of histamine when it comes to gut issues and diet. So the DAO enzyme also breaks down histamine coming from food.
Yeah.
Enzyme. If your DAO enzyme is overloaded with histamine coming from gut inflammation, right? Issues with the gut, then you are not going to have enough DAO available to break down histamine foods. Okay, so what do? We understand what's the biggest driver of histamine in the gut. It's mostly SIBO. So what does SIBO love? It loves FODMAPs and it loves resistant starch. Okay, so we get FODMAPs down, resistant starch down, and you get your histamines down to give you a lot of relief, right? And stop the cascade of inflammation that's causing more tissue damage, more inflammation, etc. And most people will have significant improvement in their symptoms very quickly, right? So right. People coming in to me with chronic reflux and heartburn or hives and itchy skin and acne, or they've got a lot of anxiety, insomnia, doing that diet will give them significant relief really quickly, right? It will get your histamine bucket down quick, smart. Okay, and that is how I work with people who come to me in a lot of distress, and we get their histamine bucket down really fast, right? Now, the important thing with that with women is that if you get your histamine bucket down, it's going to help with your hormones because there's the chicken and egg situation with estrogen. Yeah. Okay, so it helps a lot by getting your histamines down to reduce the amount of estrogen being produced from the ovaries, the thing is, it's not being broken down because your gut's not good. So it's going through the liver, through Compton sulfation and all this stuff, and it's going to the gut and the gut's a mess. It's deconjugating your estrogen. You're constipated, you're not getting rid of it, and it goes back to the liver. And then all this histamine's increasing all this estrogen's increasing more histamine.
Right.
Okay, so the histamine down the gut is going to take the load off. It's going to reduce your estrogen. It does. Clinically, you wouldn't believe. Like, unbelievable. Like, sometimes I don't even touch women's hormones. I get their estrogen down and their histamine's down, and so many of the estrogen dominant symptoms subside.
Right.
It's really significant. Really, it really is amazing how much that link is. It plays out in women all the time.
Okay. I want to delve into a little bit more into treatments in a tick, but just I'm still going through this sort of, how do we assess from a more objective viewpoint rather than symptom control? Because as you know, symptom control can be very subjective. If people feel they're being helped, they'll feel better. So should we then look for, should we do things like you mentioned before, an organic acids test that may be baseline and say 3 months into therapy to say, yes, we've elucidated a change. A change in these expression of organic acid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, to answer that question, it's, like for most people, it's SIBO. We test SIBO, absolutely test SIBO, and then we work on a protocol, definitely work on biofilm. That's really important.
Yep.
And then we retest. We will retest SIBO.
Gotcha. Always.
Okay. Now, the thing with organic acids is, I'm looking at oxalates, and it's not 100% positive. It's not 100% accurate for oxalates because you can have an oxalate dump before you do that test.
Right.
Okay. So that's not so much, but SIBO it's so prevalent, and it's the thing that we're working with a lot with histamine intolerance. So you test it, do the protocol, you retest, and most of the time, if the patient's being compliant, if you've got the bowels moving, you've got to get bowels perfect with SIBO, and you do the biofilm, and they will retest, it's gone. Great. We start adding back in FODMAPs. Feel like I can tolerate FODMAPs. I'm good. Bit of resistant starch. I'm good. Okay, good. Now some histamines.
Right.
Please have some avocado, banana, some citrus fruit. I don't give them fermented food straight away. And we see what they're tolerating. And if it was SIBO and hormones, and their hormones we're fixing their hormones too, right? Then it's like, oh, wow, like I can have tomato. I'm citrus. Oh, my God, I had a glass of wine. I didn't get a migraine. Like, really, that's how we work. We're reducing the inflammation in the gut, freeing up the DAO enzyme, retesting SIBO, and then we start adding the foods back in, and it gives us an amazing result. So the thing is with it, clinically, using diet and supplements as part of your therapeutic understanding and tools and diagnosis is so important.
Right.
The test, this is the thing. As I said, the DAO enzyme, it doesn't matter. Every time I've had that many people with so much histamine go off and test their DAO enzyme. These are always blokes, by the way. They just don't want to do it. They want more evidence. DAO's fine. It's like, I don't think it's fine. You're full of histamine. It's overloaded. They're producing enough. It's just overloaded.
Okay.
When you're testing histamine in the blood, it's like, well, apparently that used to be a marker of over-methylation, under-methylation. But it's like, no, the histamine's getting through the gut because the gut's so inflamed, got hyperpermeability. It's getting through into the bloodstream, because of leaky gut and all this stuff. So the test. It's not about testing.
Right.
This is how I really cottoned on to histamine intolerance. Was working with a colleague of mine. I had a patient of mine. I didn't know that much about histamine. She came in, MTHFR, methylation stuff. She had low histamine in her blood, 0.2.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's bad. You know, you're completely over-methylating. You're breaking your histamine down too much. Just cut. Do you know what her problem was, Andrew? She had hives. Like, right. It's just, she had insomnia and anxiety and hives. She was full of histamine.
So and measuring the blood doesn't mean that it's not in the tissues.
Yeah. She was taking methyls, probably making it way worse. Right? So it's just breaking it down. And it was breaking, her histamine was being broken down somehow, but her symptoms were histamine. And I didn't get it. And my colleague at the time sat me down and said, Joe, this is histamine. I'm like, gotcha. Okay. That test, it doesn't mean anything.
No, okay. So I know that you're saying that testing isn't that useful, but I have to ask.
So testing the causes.
Right, yes. But do you see over a period of time things like, say, homocysteine normalizing, maybe rising to a normal level, and things like MMA coming down? Do you find that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, homocysteine, absolutely. So if your homocysteine is low, you have to go and investigate the causes for that.
Yeah.
Okay. So oxalates, mold illness. You can have low homocysteine if you're simply not eating enough methionine. If you're not eating enough protein and breaking it down, because methionine will make SAMe. SAMe donates methyl groups, deactivated, gets converted back to homocysteine. So yes, you need to consider diet to intake of methionine. But you know, if these people are presenting with significant oxalate issues, mold issues, and low homocysteine, you've got to fix those issues first. You've got to get them out of the moldy house. This is what we're dealing with. Right. Like, these are big problems, right? And the thing is, you know, can you give NAC to a person with oxalates and sulfur issues? Maybe not, because oxalates are going to start dumping sulfur in the urine. Okay, this is why your homocysteine is dropping, because you're using all your homocysteine, you're chopping up your homocysteine to get your sulfur, okay, because it's being dumped in the urine. But often what can happen is that pathway is running so fast, the gut microbiome, fascinatingly, can start making sulfur because we need too much. And what happens is you're intolerant to sulfur foods because there's all this sulfur in your gut not going anywhere. Okay, so these are sometimes where people, you think, why isn't this person not taking N-acetylcysteine? So you can't just give someone N-acetylcysteine to try and raise their homocysteine. Why is it low? You know, and this is important, but this is where you've got a mountain to climb first.
Right. Okay.
You've got to go and get that sorted.
Yeah. Mold is like, that's a whole.
But this is driving down homocysteine. Like, it really, really is. My thoughts around that have completely changed since working with my colleague Melanie, and I jump on calls with her, and the mold stuff is unbelievable, right? And it's so prevalent. I'm referring people coming to me with mold illness through 5 patients a week because they think it's histamine, or they're so confused, and I'm onto it now, and I send them to Melanie, it's mold. And they've all got low homocysteine. Yeah, so I'm really onto that. And then, yes, absolutely be fantastic to see, to retest homocysteine once they're doing a lot better, to see it coming up. That would be fantastic. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, so with regards to treatment with histamine intolerance, let's go through. Like, is it, it almost seems like a ubiquitous supplement, and that is things like zinc, B6, magnesium. I mean, obviously, you've got to start right back at the beginning with digestion, with, as you said, you know, digestion biofilm, transit time with passage of food through the gut. So what sort of things do you employ there? What things do you employ for gut? What things do you employ for biochemical enzyme function support? How do we stratify the treatment regime?
Okay, so, you know, classic SIBO is where we're absolutely doing diet. It's essential. And then we're definitely going in with the antimicrobial specific for methane and or hydrogen SIBO. You know, you like the allicin, oregano. Oregano is brilliant because it works on methane and fungal, you know, there's candida there as well, and methane,
You know, like something like allicin and oregano and berberine is really important. And then we are going in with a biodisruptor, but not too fast. Don't want to go in.
Biodisruptor.
Can I say supplements? I don't know.
No, can't say supplement names.
Enzymes that break down biofilm.
Right, gotcha.
And we go in with those and we start breaking down the biofilm, but you go slowly to allow the biofilm to be broken down and then the bacteria will start moving out and you are killing it off with the herbs, okay? Bowels, you can't, this is one thing I've really learned. You've got to get your bowels moving from using digestive enzymes and lovely herbs that will increase bile production, et cetera. Because if you're using osmotic reactions with high-dose magnesium, I think you're just pulling water into the bowel. Large bowel, you're not dealing with the small. I've seen that as a disaster. You've got to...
Absolutely.
Top down. And I'm so obsessed with digestive enzymes. I read about the evolution of human hydrochloric acid and why humans have hydrochloric acid. It's what's with antimicrobial. You've got to get hydrochloric acid, pancreatic enzymes, brush water enzymes in there.
Yep.
All of those, right? You've got to get that going, right? Stimulating bile if you need to, not too quickly, because SIBO bacteria deconjugate bile. So just get it down. You've got to get the storm down first, right?
Yes.
And then you
come in.
Now, the thing with biofilm, this is the thing. We have seen this. We tested SIBO. It's pretty high. They've done the protocol, done the biofilm protocol. We've retested too early, and guess what? It's gone up. The levels have gone up because the bacteria is coming out of biofilm.
Right. And what about liver starting to wake up and dump stuff?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I've seen that. So you've got to give it time. So we reckon, about 8 weeks on biofilm, then retest. And that's what we've been doing and getting good results.
Cool.
So that's important. Now, some people's Dow enzyme histamine block, right? Now, some people, their histamines are causing them to have such incredible discomfort. And you're like, you need some histamine block just to give you some relief. You need to take the Dow enzyme along with other things just to really help with your histamines. Undiagnosed celiacs. Okay, people, adults that have been celiac and they're 40 and they're just diagnosed. So their microvilli are shot. They will probably need Dow long-term. Okay, so case-by-case basis, because we obviously don't want to overwhelm people with taking like 5 digestive enzymes before they eat. Okay, so Dow enzyme can be really, really efficacious and helpful. And then, the wonderful calcium glucarate to really start working on detoxifying your estrogen, getting that down.
Okay. When you're saying Dow enzyme, are you talking about deoxycholic acid?
No, it's just Dow enzyme. It's called, you can purchase Dow enzyme. It's a porcine-derived enzyme. It is Dow.
Ah, and okay. It's
extremely efficacious for dealing with histamine. So I often use it to help lower someone's histamine bucket really quickly. And then what we also do is when people are reintroducing histamine foods after we've done a gut protocol, etc., balance your hormones, we can use histamine block, the Dow enzyme. Please have a Dow enzyme before a tomato. Oh, I'm good. Can have it. Don't have the Dow enzyme. See what happens. Oh, I'm okay, but I had 10 tomatoes and I wasn't, right? So you can actually start using it as a therapeutic tool to help people reintroduce histamines.
Oh my goodness, Joe. Forgive me, while you've been speaking about it, I've just looked this up. And my concern was, okay, we take an enzyme, what happens to that enzyme? I'm just looking at this paper from Food Science Biotechnology 2019 in December. The lead author, the first author is Wolfgang Schnedl, and it's diamine oxidase supplementation improves symptoms in patients with histamine intolerance. I gotta say, Joe, you blow my mind whenever I speak with you. You awaken me, and you wake me up. Wow,
most researched molecule in medical science. We're looking for the histamine receptors to make pharmaceutical drugs. Anyway, Dow enzyme can supplement with DAO. So some people need, okay, who needs DAO? You know, long-term celiacs, people that have taken so many antibiotics that their gut is just shot to bits. They can take DAO to help them have some histamine. Okay, these are the people that have multiple food intolerances and they just, life's not much fun. They just want to go out for lunch and not have a, you know, or anxiety or a breakout in eczema or migraine. They can, it can, it's very, very efficacious supplement. Okay, so the DAO enzyme is really helpful, but I often don't prescribe it because I'm like, you just had full-blown SIBO. You need to get it down and the diet is going to get your histamine down so quickly that you don't need to purchase another expensive supplement.
Right.
Now, the other thing that is important, well, with women's hormones, you know, it depends on, you know, what's driving issues with follicle development and ovulation is inflammation.
Right.
Okay. So here, you know, if they don't have sulfur issues, NAC, so great because it's going to help with healthy follicles, healthier ovulation, better progesterone. And then we go in with some calcium deglucarate to help detoxify estrogen. That can be really, really helpful. And then we look at the nutrients we need to make progesterone. So we need iron and we need zinc and we need iodine and we need vitamin D, all really, really important. The whole B vitamins thing, like I'm not even talking about ethyls, but B vitamins, I'm really cautious with people that have very high histamines to give them B vitamins straight away because it will make their eczema worse, acne worse, headaches worse if given too quickly. So get the SIBO testing done, start them on the diet, digestive enzymes, reduce all their symptoms and histamine. Then you can go in with some Bs, which is lovely for supporting, you know, gently supporting methylation. It's helping with energy and stress and all of that. That's really important. I think the whole SAMe can really, really shine, especially with the women with high histamine, high estrogen. Okay, so a lot of these women, you know, the Dutch hormone test is really good for showing what is going on with methylation of estrogen in real time via COMT, right? Real time. Right. So if women are having, I've got a patient at the moment, chronic insomnia, and you know, it was histamine, and then it's like, look at her Dutch test, and she's got very, very low methylation of estrogen. Okay, so we reduced. I didn't go in with SAMe straight away because her histamines were so high, but we reduced her histamine bucket. She had SIBO as well. Reduced her histamine bucket, and then we put her on SAMe now. Right, and some calcium deglucarate to reduce the estrogen, and she's finally sleeping for the first time in 2 years. Okay, because she's chronic insomnia. It was really chronic, but she couldn't even work out the estrogen link. But I had that Dutch hormone test in front of me. It's like, oh, really low methylation of estrogen, and she's like, "Joe, I've worked it out. I don't sleep. I'm way worse from day 10 of my cycle." I'm like, okay. That's so you start to SAMe because it's helping detoxify estrogen via COMT in the liver. Obviously, we're getting the SIBO down, the bowel's good to get rid of the estrogen, just keep moving it. And then the SAMe is breaking down the histamine in the central nervous system.
Gotcha. Can we go through just a few relevant doses? Do you start off really small because of sensitivity here and work your way up? Like what dose of NAC do you use? What dose of calcium deglucarate do you use? Can you give us a few examples?
Yeah. So with NAC, I'll go 600 milligrams twice a day.
Right. If, gotcha.
I don't think anyone's going to react to that. Mm-hmm. You've stumped me with calcium deglucarate because I actually give two capsules of a certain brand. I can't remember what that is. And 200 milligrams of SAMe, it can be enough. 200. Anyway, I'll always start low with SAMe, right? So 200 and then maybe go up to 400. And usually people on 400 is enough. I've had people come to me taking 1,200 milligrams a day that they've somehow pulsed. Taken themselves and think it's great, but you often
very expensive though.
That's right, and they haven't
they're lucky they didn't have an adverse reaction from it, and everything else is not fixed. So if you're fixing the blockages in methylation, it's just a nice sort of thing to have, a bit of SAMe. And I find it really shines with women's estrogen histamine issues significantly. On this lady, gotcha. She's like, she in mood. It significantly helped with her mood. Well, it's going to break down. I mean, you know, estrogen, you're so lucky you're a man, you don't understand this. When estrogen's high and out of whack with progesterone, it is horrendous for women's moods. It's right. really bad, yeah. right? And then histamine can cause depression as well, let alone anxiety and insomnia. So you're breaking down histamine, you're breaking down your estrogen, and it supports neurotransmitter synthesis. So there's nothing like SAMe when it's needed.
I think it's really interesting with regards to what you mentioned just before about mood, and that is that if you look back historically, antihistamines were originally used in psychiatric medicine.
Wow, for sleep?
For psychosis.
Psychosis, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And that indeed is one of the issues with long-term high dose, these quote unquote relaxants, is that they can have deleterious effects long-term high dose. And so that's why they're S3, not S2.
You know, when I wrote my book, when you just focus on something, when I wrote my book and started researching everything on histamine, it's like, there's so much information there. There's so much research. And it's coming from mainly the pharmaceutical medication, they're trying to make pharmaceutical drugs. And there's so much that we can do with natural medicine when we just think about it. Just sit down and think. Think about your biochemistry. Think about your digestive enzymes. I remember I prescribed this certain digestive enzyme, and it had brush border enzymes in it. Well, I just used to prescribe it because it was the thing to do, right? Because it was pancreatic enzymes and some hydrochloric acid. But people would always come back to that one. I love that one, Joe. I love that one. I love that one. I love that one. I'm like, why? Well, brush border enzyme. So, you know, learn about brush border enzymes first day of college. I forget, right? You go back and like, brush border enzymes. Well, they're small bowel. And what happens is SIBO is you damage your brush border enzymes, your microvilli, you have reduced brush border enzymes. So it's like, okay, well, when people do well on these enzymes, there's a reason. It must be they've got SIBO, right? You just stop and think. We are so lucky that we can really stop and think, use our supplements and, and diet to make an amazing change in people and to really learn about how the human body works.
Yeah.
You know, every day we learn, as a naturopath, you learn more and more and more about how the human body works. My confidence has also come because of how incredibly efficacious diet and supplements and amazing herbal medicine are for human health, and how you can get such incredible results. It blows my mind.
I'll add something there, and it's judicious and well-directed supplements. So, and this is where my next question is going to be, is that obviously this is a whole ball of wool to learn about. And it's not a simple thing to just go, oh, there we go, A equals A to B. And how can people learn in a more formal manner so that they can actually create the picture, build their practice, change the way that they're prescribing to help patients with not just histamine intolerance, but of course methylation and other issues as well?
Well, I have written it's like a 140-page ebook on histamine intolerance, and it covers the science of histamine intolerance. So what is histamine, how histamine is made in the body, how it's broken down in the body. Okay, yep. And it goes into the 13 major causes of histamine intolerance. And this is really important. And this is where the testing can start. Dysbiosis, yep. Large bowel dysbiosis, SIBO, SIFO, starch malabsorption, leaky gut, Helicobacter pylori, digestive enzyme insufficiency, okay, gluten intolerance, oxalates, candida, estrogen, methylation issues, mast cell activation syndrome, and mold issues. Okay, we go into the causes. I also talk about the testing for histamine intolerance. So I do tell you about whole blood histamine and really why it's not really that useful, and the DAO enzyme. Okay, so my book does talk about those things and also why they're not the be all and end all of diagnosing histamine intolerance. Talks about SIBO testing, comprehensive digestive stool analysis, Dutch hormone testing. And then I also talk about the treatments. What are the options for SIBO and Candida, large bowel dysbiosis, oxalates, Eastern detoxification, methylation. Okay, so I've written this ebook. I've also, you can purchase the e-bundles. There's a whole video masterclass as well.
Oh, wow.
The e-bundle also contains information on blood tests, standard blood tests that you'll get from the doctor, and how that can help you point towards your cause of histamine intolerance. Chronic low iron, okay? SIBO and biofilm problems, right? Biofilm will use your iron. And I've also got a whole lot of recipes that are low FODMAP, low starch, low histamine, which can help people really reduce their histamine bucket really quickly. So that's in the e-bundle, and that's all available on my website.
Jo, you are an absolute whirlwind of information, expertise, and care for these patients who have got issues. And you untangle this web, this woolen mat, and you sort of tease it apart and go, okay, what are the possible issues that we can support somebody with? You're an absolute wonder. Thank you so much for taking us through histamine intolerance today. It was absolutely awesome to learn from you.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been so great to chat with you today. Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks, of course, for your company, everyone. Remember, you can find all of the show notes and the other podcasts on your favourite podcast app and at naturalmedicinepartners.com.au. I'm Andrew Whitfield-Cook. This is Natural Medicine Podcast. ¶¶